Our book critic Maureen Carrigan has a wish for this holiday season, that everyone read a terrific book, and she has some to recommend. She says she doesn't care whether you read the books on her 2010 Best of the Year list electronically or the old-fashioned way.
Sometimes there is justice in the world. That was my first thought when I heard that Patti Smith had won the National Book Award this fall for her glorious memoir, Just Kids, which has just come out in paperback. Smith wrote the book to honor Robert Mapplethorpe, her youthful partner in love, art, and ambition. But Just Kids is also a celebration of the frayed beauty of New York City in its so-called years of decline, the late 1960s into the 70s. Early in her memoir, Smith likens herself to the iconic Audrey Hepburn, a young girl full of pure yearning. Smith says that she and the more brooding Mapplethorpe were a curious mix of Funny Face and Faust. Another standout work of nonfiction this year also explores a famous relationship that defied convention. Hazel Rowley's biography of the marriage of Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, called simply Franklin and Eleanor. Rowley charts the evolution of the Roosevelt Union from a standard-issue high society alliance to something we don't even have a label for. Maybe semi-open marriage comes closest. Speaking of conformity and rebellion, Rebecca Traister's so very smart and lively book about the 2008 presidential campaign called Big Girls Don't Cry teases out how our reigning cultural narratives about femininity and playing nice came to wield so much power during the campaign and finally in the voting booth. For all its daring allure, early 20th century American detective fiction pretty much played by the rules when it came to the standard issue look of its detective heroes. Sam Spade and company were white straight males who were quick to pull the trigger on any characters who were different. One enormously popular detective hero, however, who smashed the stereotype was Charlie Chan, the subject of a fascinating mishmash of a book, also called Charlie Chan, by Chinese-born scholar Yunta Huang. In the late 19th century, ordinary people, mill girls, garment workers, and miners, embraced the revolutionary idea that by joining together, they might better their lives. Philip Dre's spectacular narrative history of the American labor movement, called There Is Power in a Union, reads like a novel, filled with dramatic acts of barbarism and bravery. This nonfiction Best of the Year list has turned out to be composed of stories and people who refuse to play by the rules, so I'll end it with two other out-of-the-box mentions. First, Laura Hillenbrand's Unbroken, the unforgettable and, yes, inspirational World War II tale of Louis Zamperini, Olympic athlete and prisoner of war. Zamperini's story puts to shame all of us these days who use the word survivor casually. Second, two books by Gabrielle Burton, a writer now in her 70s, whose near-lifelong obsession with Tamsin Donner, the wife of the leader of the notorious Donner Party, inspired her to write a fabulous on-the-road feminist memoir called Searching for Tamsin Donner, as well as an evocative recreation of Tamsin's lost journal called Impatient with Desire. Since we're on to fiction now, here are my top picks. Certainly Jonathan Franzen's Freedom, a novel about a marriage, deserved all of its applause, despite the literary spitball fight over Franzen's demigod status. My personal favorite novel of the year was Lionel Shriver's So Much for That, a moving black comedy about the emotional and financial cost of health care in America. I also admired David Mitchell's beautiful novel, The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet, which traces the life of its title character, who starts working in 1799 on a small European outpost in the harbor of Nagasaki, Japan. Finally, Gary Steingart's novel, Super Sad True Love Story, moves at warp speed, telling a dystopian but comic story about a future where books are derided as objects that smell like wet socks. I can never close out a literary year without giving a nod to mystery fiction. The late Stieg Larsson's last Lisbeth Salander novel, The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest, deservedly overpowered all. But this was the year I also belatedly discovered suspense writer Tana French. French's police procedurals about the Dublin murder squad, including this year's Faithful Place, are brilliantly dark and moody. I want to end by doffing my hat not to a book, but to an independent bookseller and small press publisher. David Thompson was known throughout the mystery world. He died suddenly this year at 38. David introduced me to the wonders of noir writers like Reed Farrell Coleman, Daniel Woodrell, and Martin Limone. His legacy is a reminder to all of us who love books that, as someone once said about the late critic Irving Howe, enthusiasm is not the enemy of the intellect.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. You can find links to all the books on her Best of the Year list, along with links to excerpts of those books and Maureen's original reviews of some of those books, on our website, freshair.npr.org. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne Baldonado, Joan Tuohy-Westman, Sam Brigger, John Myers, John Sheehan, Lauren Krenzel, and Heidi Simon. Sue Spolin directed the show. WHYY's chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. I'm Terry Gross.